Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
In the Argentinian game, he's telling me, right, you're going on and this is what I want you to do. And as he does it, Bex falls on the floor, yeah. Kicks out at Simone. Oh. And as he kicks out at Simone, I look at Glenn, and Glenn looks at me. Glenn, I've got to put someone on that can play midfield.
What has happened to the English centre-forward?
Ronaldo and Messi. Every young player wanted to be that. Everyone's talking about financial fair play now. We had that 8.5 years ago.
You got whacked, didn't you?
I got whacked, £40 million.
Why did you leave?
With the fans, it became toxic. I was thinking, why do I need to take this?
Do you remember scoring a goal at the back post against me where you put me in the back of the net?
Yes.
Why have you been doing that every day of the week? That's what Gary used to do. You used to love that one. Welcome to Stick to Football, brought to you by Skybet. Yeah. One take, Gary. That's what they call me, one take, Gary.
Hey, right, you're back on Instagram.
Did I? Oh, yeah, I sent a picture last week.
Oh, yeah. Instagram.
Did I do a picture? Well, what did I do last week?
What did Roy put on Instagram last week?
My memory. Is your memory? My memory.
Oh, my God.
A picture with you?
And you headed the ball more than me.
You start to think you're just like wrong.
I can't remember Instagram.
I know, it's crazy, isn't
it? Oh, yeah, Ollie, yeah. Sorry, was it Ollie, yeah? I felt bad as if I'd slagging Ollie off when he was here. Remember Ollie was on him. The Leverkusen. Everyone loves Ollie, don't they?
Oh, here he is. He's let himself go, you know, because his wife's away. He hasn't even had a shave.
That's why we're here.
Thank you.
You realise how she didn't say yes?
I did have a shave this morning.
You like this?
I like it, yeah.
You like this?
Right, he's got competition, hasn't he? I tell you what.
Look at this phone. Richest guy in the world. Can we start with
Roy,
this?
Is that your phone?
Can we start
this
with
this? This is my phone. Roy,
richest guy in the world.
Can we just have a look at Roy's phone? Can we get him a new phone?
And his grandkids play with it.
It's terrible. It's like...
Why don't you get a decent phone?
It's still got the button.
Be careful the way you're using your finger, don't you?
Smell this. That's nice, isn't it?
Nice, yeah. What is it?
Tom Ford, this one.
Oh, it's nice, that.
It is. Bloody hell, matey.
That was a good pour, eh? That was a really good pour. I really like
that. Les, I've got a note here that you have a helicopter licence.
Yo, man, I used to always.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you fly a helicopter?
Yes.
Wow.
Do you come today by helicopter?
No.
That is incredible.
Did you still use it?
I passed my test while I was at Spurs.
Wow, that's
how did you do that?
Is like, that to get out of Spurs quickly?
when I was at Newcastle,
yeah.
Geezer, I was Keegan to put something out saying like, you know, what he said to me was like, you're coming into a goldfish bowl in terms of like London, you can get lost and stuff. You can't do nothing up here. So I said, three things you want to do. I said, I want to learn how to play saxophone, learn how to cook, and I want to learn how to ride a motorbike. He said to me, I can let you do two of them, but the third one, I can't let you do. So riding a motorbike, so I can't let you do.
Yeah.
So I said, oh, fuck, you know. So he asked me what I wanted to do. That's what I want to do. So he goes, all right. There was a place in Newcastle that built him a Harley, and he said, I'll let you pass your test if you ride the Harley back to my house. So I said, all right, no problem.
Giving Keegan to the Harley?
Yeah. Mm. So, but someone in Newcastle just built it for him. He couldn't ride it, but he was just going to showcase it at his house. So he said, as long as you agree to ride it to my house.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, no problem. And then some he put this in the programme saying, like, you know, just things for me to do. And then someone guy come on and said, look, do you want to learn how to fly a helicopter? And at first I was like, nah, not really. And he goes, come and have a look. So I went down and had a look. It just got into my head. Oh. Do you know what I mean?
I'd be so scared. Is it scary?
Nah, not. It's one of those things. Once you go up, you go, you either love it or you hate it. You'll go, get me down straight away, or you'll go, boom. And to be fair, when I first went up, I was like, fuck, no, I'm not sure I like this. And then the geezer said, where do you live? And I said, I just live over there. So he goes, let's go and have a look at your house. As soon as I saw my house, that was it. Just changed my perception.
How come? Everything. You wouldn't see my house.
It just changed my perception of everything.
We did it in the jungle, did you?
No,
get me out of it. Because it's open on the sides. Right, I don't know if it was meant to be, but this one was.
Yeah, because you're
in the
jungle.
And I was like,
yeah.
Oh.
Scary.
Oh, so scary. How did you get into the jungle?
We drove in, but like, I think we had to go on one to go up to, when we had to do the walking on that big tower.
Yeah.
So we had to go round and then they landed somewhere. Oh. But I'm not really fussed with them, to be honest. It doesn't bother me. I'm not scared.
Have you been in one?
I've been in a helicopter. I'm not.
Have you?
No, ever. Oh, no, I mean, it's not. Not
it's making that. Me feel.
We jumped out of a plane, didn't we, last year?
You wouldn't do that again, would you?
Oh, no.
I was ill for a couple of
days. Yeah, I was ill for a bit of that.
I mean, what was it like when you was coming down? Was it
not
fast?
Good.
Was it like freezing?
No, I didn't mind the free fall, but it was when you went into the, you know, in the parachute.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you start to swing and you just get like motion sickness. I was getting, I felt ill.
Is that why you were ill after?
I was ill for a few hours after that night, yeah. You were ill as well. It was, wasn't great.
Jeez.
Do you play saxophone?
Overrated, that is.
I started to learn while I was up there, but I came back to London and then too many distractions in London. You know what, I mean?
What year did you go to Newcastle then?
95.
That season.
Yeah.
That season.
Right.
Right, here we go. Right. That season.
Right.
Welcome to Stick to Football, brought to you by Skybet. And our guest this week joining me, Righty, Roy and Jill, is a Newcastle, Tottenham and QPR legend, Les Ferdinand. He's going to talk to us about his career, the famous Manchester United Newcastle running and his time at QPR as sporting director. We're going to start with centre-forwards.
OK.
And we've got two English centre-forwards in it. Hey, by the way, do you remember this? Do you remember us playing centre half against Newcastle? Me and you were centre backs and a Christmas and it was like ice on the pitch.
Yeah.
Do you remember the setup for corners that day?
Defending?
Yeah.
No, but hopefully you're gonna tell me.
We had two on you. Right, me and him. it's a fact this. I was there to block you as the ball got kicked and Roy was literally stood there behind me to go and win the ball because you basically used to score from headers all the time. Do you remember that?
No. I remember scoring.
In the game?
I scored, yeah.
From centre-half?
Yeah, Gary. Yeah. Yes, from centre-half.
They should have put two on him. Yeah.
Was it a corner? I was from a set-piece. Remember, they defended.
Oh, yeah.
And Phil played, didn't I? I stayed up from a corner.
Okay.
Remember?
Yeah, no, I do remember, I think. 2-0, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Do you remember the game?
Yeah.
We were
calling it the other one.
It's going to be a low point in your career. You said it for me.
I mean, delivery weren't great, was it?
Yeah. And you didn't get any comment. One corner, you think you got, was it?
Maybe two or three. English centre forwards. So in the 90s, I always say this. I was obviously in the squad. And Michael Owen, Alan Shearer, Peter Beardsley, Teddy Sheringham, Ian Wright, Robbie Fowler, Les Ferdinand, Andy Cole, Stan Collymore, Chris Sutton and Dion Dublin for the centre-forwards.
Wow.
That could have been selected in the squad in the mid-90s.
Well, not the last four or five you've mentioned. Jesus Christ, come on. Jesus, man.
What has happened to the English centre-forward, Les?
Ronaldo and Messi. I think in terms of... We went for a period where wingers were scoring goals, were scoring 30 goals a season.
Yeah.
And everyone wanted to be Ronaldo, everyone wanted to be Messi. And
what, the managers?
No, I think the players no longer wanted to be a traditional centre-forward, didn't want to be a number nine, they wanted to be that person. Henri comes onto the scene, they want to be that person that comes off the wing and score goals, and they were scoring an abundance of goals. So every young player wanted to be that player. Hence was the, you know, the demise of the number nine.
Wow. Who did you want to be when you grew up?
I suppose the person I kind of looked at and...
Denzel Washington.
Yeah, exactly. that was one of them.
Sorry. Go on, no, go on, sorry.
I don't know how good at football Denzel was. I didn't want to be like Denzel, you know, to be fair. But growing up, I suppose, you know, I used to look at Van Basten, I used to look at Vieri, and, you know, I mean, younger than that was obviously Palais when I was growing up as a kid. I looked at Palais and that was about it. You know, I wasn't allowed to go to football, so I used to watch it. I used to watch what I could on the TV. There wasn't a lot about then, so...
Weren't allowed to go because of...
My parents didn't think it was an environment that was safe for me to go to. So when I was growing up, yeah. I couldn't actually go
What area was you in?
I was... I grew up around a corner from QPR. I was in Labgrove, so it was a stone throw away. And my parents just didn't think it was an environment for me.
70s, bro. That would have been intense, yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to Millwall at the time. So I was going to Millwall at the time.
How was that?
Yeah, because my aunt used to live in Deptford, so every other week you'd have to go and stay there. So some of the times Millwall would be playing. So you'd end up going there. But it was intense.
Then. Did you go and watch? Did you go?
Yeah, I used to watch a lot of Millwall games when I was that age, like 12 and 13. I used to watch a lot of them. Yeah.
Did you feel safe when you were there?
Well, this is the thing. This is the thing. When you went and watched Mill, you could, you know, you're jumping over the top, you know what I mean? And then, because it was a lot of people there, you know when you got that metal bar?
Yeah.
So you could stand on that bar because you could get to see it if it was packed, and then you can hold on to someone's neck so you could stand on and so you wouldn't fall off.
Yeah.
So it was really quite friendly. But, like, it was good. I used to love it.
Yeah. Just on those centre forwards I named before, we've talked about your frustrations with England, haven't we? Did you feel frustrated with England? Because obviously at the time, the main partnership that was seen was like Shearer and Sheringham. Did you feel that you weren't respected with England or didn't get the sort of the love that you probably could have got? I know you feel the same about that, don't you?
Yeah, for sure. Every time I played for England, it always felt like if I didn't play out my skin and have, you know, that was at the top of my game.
Yeah.
That was always going to be my last chance. It was always my last chance. I never felt I was given a run in the England side, even when I was, you know, going through a period of where I was scoring goals in the Premier League and felt on top of my game and never felt I was given an opportunity to play. It was always going to be my last game.
I think the pressure from that as well, though, Les, is that when you name all those people and that, you know that if you don't do it, then someone's waiting to get their opportunity.
Mm. But is that good pressure?
It's good pressure, but then while you're playing, trying to get it done, you know what I mean? It's something that you want to be able to, you know, like, you know, Teddy comes in. Teddy's not someone who's scored loads of goals, but Teddy brings something else. Mm. But when you look at what you're trying to get in front of Shearer, and that person was mine and Les's role, and Fowler's and Cole's and Collingwood. Teddy had a different role. So if you came in and you weren't hitting it and scoring straight off the bat, and I know I missed a few, especially in the Norway game and the Russia game, got marked out of the game in Russia, Norway, when those were my opportunities, two opportunities I missed. And I knew I'm not going to get that chance again. Yeah. It's not going to come again.
Do you think you scored a lot of goals because of that mindset? I was watching some videos of you and there's so many goals where it's like 70-30 in favour of the keeper or you think the defender's going to get it and you just come from nowhere and it's almost as if you just want the ball more than them. Did you feel like that?
I think it was a little bit like right, I just said there, and the names that you read out there, those guys sparked me. They inspired me because, like, they were scoring at the weekend and then you felt, I've got to score. I've got to score. So that 70-30, you had to make into your favour because if you weren't scoring, you weren't going to be mentioned in those circles.
In Euro 96, you won, I think, PFA Player of the Year in 96 but didn't start a game.
Yeah.
The Players Player of the Year and didn't win a game. I didn't start a game in the Euros.
Mm.
That...
Yeah, I mean, I didn't start a game. I didn't even come on. So forget starting the game. I didn't even come on. And I remember that was probably the worst time for me because, as you said, PFA played a year. OK, we didn't win the league that year. But I felt I'd had a decent season. And not to play a minute in Euro 96.
I didn't realise you not played a minute. You hadn't started again.
Yeah, no, I didn't come on.
I knew that as well because, obviously, I didn't get into the squad.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, Les and... who's the PFA Player of the Year, and Robbie Fowler, who's doing what he's doing as well, playing well, you think, OK. But then to see none of them get even a minute.
No, Robbie came on.
Did Robbie come on? What game did he come on?
Because he came on in the first game, because I remember after the first game, we went to training the next day. Some of the boys that played did the warm down, and the ones that didn't did a little bit more. And I remember Venables was pulling me and saying, look, I know you got the hump, but I know what you're capable of doing. I just needed to see Robbie. I hadn't seen Robbie, and so I needed to see Robbie. So Robbie came on. Mm. I was like, okay, no problem. And then in the end, it got to a stage where I was like, I was just going home. I was coming back to the hotel in the afternoons, and I was just going home. Mm.
Venables gave me the same talk. But it was on the phone. He said, listen, I'm going to bring Fowler in because I know what you could do. You scored. So that's obviously what his line was.
Why do managers do that? Because they're almost setting themselves up for an even tougher conversation down the line. It's almost like, we'll nip it in the bud now. But did you do that with
difficult.
Players?
No, it is difficult. But when you have that many options, I can see why managers would obviously try and pull a player and almost giving you excuses, isn't it? It's difficult. Listen, that's difficult for a manager. You hope they're going to be up front with you. But you mentioned the players there. It's amazing the options a manager has. But maybe not to get on. I think that can be... We talk about going away playing for your country. It's great. And I was lucky when I went up, I generally played. But it must be frustrating for a player who's involved in their country, who's generally one of the main men for the clubs, obviously, like you were that year.
One player of the season.
One player, and I go in. It's frustrating.
And I said before the tournament, I went to Newcastle, I'd scored 26 goals at QPR in all competition the year before. Yeah. And I remember we went to Barbados end of the season on a pre-season tour with QPR. And that's where I kind of like sat with Ray and said, look, you know, I'm moving on and so forth. He knew it was going to happen anyway. And it was there that there was the Umbro tournament coming up.
Yeah, I played in that.
Yeah, the Umbro tournament was coming up. And I was speaking to Doug Ellis, the late Doug Ellis, who was at Aston Villa at the time.
Mr. Tap-Up.
And he was obviously at Villa at the time and blah, blah, blah. And he was on the England FA committee at the time. And he pulled me while I was in Barbados saying, we started talking, he was saying, like, you know, we're going to try and sign you at the end of the season. I've spoken to Richard Thompson and he's saying that if we bid, blah, would you come and speak to us? Yeah. And I said, well, if you bid and they accept the bid, then I'm going to come and speak to you. And he went, yeah, he goes, shame of that you're not in the Umbro tournament. And I went, what are you talking about? Mm. He said, have you not seen the thing? It hadn't come out yet, but obviously the committee had it. And I wasn't in the Umbro tournament.
Everyone was in that.
I know, that's what I mean.
I played 17 games for United. That was where David Unsworth, Colin Cooper from Middlesbrough. There was like a... Because everyone pulled out, didn't they?
Yeah, that's right.
What year was that?
95, year before the Euro.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
My debut for England there was, I think it was 19 or 20. It was against Japan and Brazil in that Umbro tournament.
Yeah.
Oh. It was like a tournament the tournament the year after the Euros.
Oh, OK.
And so I'd gone through that period and it was Doug Ellis that told me I was left out. Never spoke to Terry Venables, nothing, just was left out of the Umbro tournament. And I didn't get back into the England squad until I was around about November.
Right.
December, after scoring the goals I was scoring at Newcastle and still being ignored, and the papers were going, how comes he's scoring all these goals and not back in the England squad?
Why would you think that you weren't?
I had no idea. And I said to Venables, when he called me back into the squad and we kind of like we had a conversation, I said, look, the truth is, if you don't fancy me as a player, I've got no problem with that. Yes. Just tell the world. Mm. Just tell everybody. I said, you're the England manager. They'll say, right, OK, if you think I'm a good domestic player, no problem, but I'm not. I don't cut it international. They'll listen to you. Why bring me into the squad? And he went, Les, you know what it's like. Les, you know it goes.
You even gave him out.
So, do you think that, I mean, Terry, to be fair, I think he would have wanted a striker and he would have wanted one off. I think that would have been certain. But do you think he thought you and Alan couldn't play together? Do you think that he was looking at you both thinking, both of them just don't, you know, they just don't work together, and Shearer's my number one. Do you think it was as simple as that?
It was simple as that, yeah. I that's the only thing I can think of. He felt that me and Alan couldn't play together, and when Keegan actually brought us together, he said, look, I'm not trying to prove anybody wrong, I just believe that you two can play together. Mm. And so...
Did you have a good partnership with Al?
Yeah, I did, yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
I did. In terms of the way in which you worked together, in terms of everything?
Yeah, 100%. It was like, you know, there was never a problem. You know, I'd worked with so many forwards at QPR. And back then, you used to play two up front. Mm. Mm-hmm. so it was never a problem to adapt to whoever I was playing with. I never had a problem with it.
That was timeless as two frontmen. You know, if you made a run, if you was making a run into that channel, then you had to come and face up here just in case they wanted to do. You know, that's how it used to. It's like when people say, "Oh, two strikers can't play together." Yes, you can.
Yeah.
Because back in the day, if you come short, then you have to be going long.
Yeah.
Those kind of things. That's what happens. It's got to be like
simple
those
as that, wasn't it?
And I always say about midfield players now. I said when you played, you weren't a holding midfield player. You played with Inchy. If Inchy went forward, I'll tuck in here for him. If you went forward, Inchy go, I've got to tuck in here. Do you know what I mean? And so you just played off each other. Now it's become so
structured, isn't it?
Holding midfield player who never goes forward, who passes sideways and backwards and never goes forward. It's
like Niall Quinn, Kevin Phillips partnership.
Yeah.
Never happened now, do they? But they're so effective. Yeah. Like the big guy going up and then the little one running
getting
for
the knockdowns.
It.
You had it at a Palace. That's what you done at Palace.
Absolutely, with Brighty had it with Arsenal, with Alan Smith for a bit. Even with Kevin Campbell, people were saying, oh, we're kind of similar. Obviously, Kevin was a bigger guy.
Right.
But Kevin, you know what I mean?
But surely one of them will go for headers more than you,
absolutely.
Righty, were they?
All of them.
Okay.
All of them.
Right. Okay.
All of them.
Right.
We're
going to play a little quiz. We're going to go through the caps that you think those strikers got for England. Jill, Les, Roy and Ian. Michael Owen.
How many caps for England?
Yeah. We've got to be quick, there's about 10 of them.
Come on,
Jill.
Okay,
there's not prize at the end of it.
Michael Owen?
Michael Owen! Don't give your guess away.
Sorry.
57.
I was going to say 50 fucking 7. I'm going to go 54. A lot of injuries, didn't he? Yeah,
I'd go about like closer to 60 caps, because it was 40 goals or something.
Righty, your one up, 89.
Wow.
89.
I must have thought he got injured more.
He did start playing when he was 9.
How many goals do you think he got?
40.
40.
40. How do you know that?
Because he's a forward and I look at these things.
Right. Chris Sutton. I'm going to move around the list.
Oh.
Chris Sutton, how many caps did he bring?
Oh, God.
Probably one,
isn't it?
Yeah, could be.
Six.
No, not even.
I was going to go 3.
I'm going to say none. He played for England. Because he pulled out of that B squad. Yeah, all right, I'm going to say 3.
I'm going to say 1.
1.
I'm telling you, bro.
Wow.
Well, I was near, wasn't I? Yeah. I'm like, Jesus.
You know what? Because
like Andy Cole. Andy Cole. Great Andy Cole. Played, scored hundreds of goals.
I feel like I'm that.
He's trying to kid us on here. How many caps did he play for England? Well, let's do it.
Go on, James. What do you think?
I feel under pressure.
Don't feel under pressure.
Under 50.
Wow.
Was he?
Wow.
Or more?
Come on.
I feel like you've given us a...
Do you want to go this way? We go this way so you get thinking.
Let me go.
Yeah, you go first. We go this way, Jill.
11.
19.
I was going to say 10.
Yeah, I would have got 23.
15.
Oh.
Are they nearest? 19.
I think I'm nearest.
One goal.
11, obviously.
One
goal.
19.
Yeah. Both 4 away.
Ian Wright, you're not allowed in.
I know this.
I'm going to say 37.
No more.
You're really not.
Is it?
No.
Jesus!
I'm going to say 30.
I was going to say, around 50. I was going to give you 50.
33.
Oh. Wow.
9 goals.
It's not bad. Probably a lot of
you were wrong.
Well.
Shearer. 5 against San Marino.
Shearer.
Oh, Shearer's got a lot, truly.
Shearer's...
This is more your era of football than me.
He stopped playing for England when he was
29. 82.
No, I'm not...
No, not that tight.
I'm going to say 65.
No.
68.
I'm going to go 78.
63. Right. I thought he'd play more games.
So did
I. Did it all.
Jesus, shucks.
I nearly got
Les
that
Ferdinand.
One.
Not you, Les.
Well, he should have had more,
I'm
going to
say
think
17
that's...
or 19. I'm going to say... I'll go 18.
I'll go 17.
You've looked it up.
I haven't looked it up.
22.
I haven't looked it up because I'm just 17. Checking. I'm checking it with
17.
I just
time we're in and around.
But tell me, why
did,
when I look at... Les, your goals and your caps and goals, 17, 5 goals. Andy Cole, 15 caps, 1 goal. Ian Wright, 33 caps, 9 goals. Robbie Fowler, 26 caps, 7 goals. These were great goal scorers, but for England, to be fair, I would say...
But there must be managers at the time thought these are really brilliant players. Listen, there'd be reasons.
at club level, but they'd have maybe, not maybe doubts, or I'm going with a certain striker and I'll hang my hat on him, would it be a shear or whatever, and that's why lads would miss out.
And remember the gaps in between. As well. Yeah. Remember with Al, you know, Venable's done an unbelievable thing for Al with the 2 years leading up when he didn't score. Yeah.
19 games.
Exactly, to know.
Did you know it, legend?
It's the kind of thing when you hear the conversation. So can you imagine being a striker on the other side of that? Listen, for Shearer, amazing. Venable's having the faith, and in the end, repaid the faith. But if you're a forward and you hear that, you know that you. What are you playing for?
How good was Robbie Fowler?
Robbie was unbelievable finish.
He was and how many caps did Robbie get?
And Robbie, how many goals?
20.
No, Robbie was 26 and only 7 goals.
See, I think these players, I think of them as being like 75, 80. Yeah. Like, it's mind-blowing.
McCauley, but there's certain players who would go into the England squad, and not just England, international, and they just don't feel it or get on with the stat. And lads don't, they end up not going. McCauley definitely stopped, didn't he? Kind of almost fell out with that side of it.
Yeah. Yeah, because you go through the same thing. You're like, you're going there, and every time you play, it's not just the manager, but the press. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is his last chance.
Yeah.
His last chance. You think, hang on a minute. I've only had one chance.
Stuff about Corley needed 70.
That was a killer.
And but to be fair, I always remember when...
That was Glenn, wasn't it?
Yeah, Glenn came out and said, you need 7 chances. I said, show me another centre-forward that gets 7 chances in a game.
Yeah, of course. There's different ways of looking at it, of course. Yeah.
You know, that's a tough one for Corley, I think.
You went to 98 as well and didn't play a minute. You went to two tournaments, 96. And you, no, you 98, but 96 and 98, you've gone to two tournaments.
Maybe so Les was a bad lad. Hey, pennies dropped. You were wrong then.
Yeah, we have to bring him. He's got loads of goals in Premier League. I'll tell you what, the bad lad around the place.
98 was kind of really, really different because I went there. You'd broken your ankle, didn't you?
No, I tore my hamstring.
Tore his hamstring, so... I wasn't expecting to go to 98 because I'd had a few injuries that season. Glenn Hoddle put on a B team game at QPR for me and Letiz, and played in it, scored and everything. And he goes, "I just need to get you some games. Yeah. I want to take you." And then he takes me to the thing. And then we was in the Argentinian game, warming up. Glenn Rhoda comes and gets me from behind the goal. Says, "You're going on." So I come back, get my top on, blah blah blah. Walk to the sidelines with Glenn. And we're standing on the side and he's telling me, right, I'm taking Michael off, blah, you're going on and this is what I want you to do. I'm going through all the bits and pieces. And as he does it, Bex falls on the floor, kicks out at Simone.
Oh.
And as he kicks out at Simone, I look at Glenn and Glenn looks at me. Because the referee's right. As the referee's running over to me, you know he's going off.
He's going off.
Way the referee's running over, he's just going like this.
Yes.
Right, and he's like, I'm not going
on, bro.
Oh. I look at Glenn and Glenn looks at me. He goes, Les, I've got to put someone on that can play midfield and get forward. And that was Paul Merce. The guy sort of like retreat back.
Were you frustrated in 96 when you played Germany? They didn't make subs, did that? Were you expecting?
Someone came on?
What happened in that game? You know, at Wembley, you're right next to the benches, right next to the crowd and all that, and all the crowd was shouting, "Get Fernand on, get Fernand. Venables, what are you doing? Get Fernand on." And he went like this. And when he did that,
I just went back and sat down. That probably wasn't helping, was it? Managers are stubborn.
Yeah, exactly. If the media are pushing for a certain player, they go, I'm in charge. Yeah. This, you should have got hold of Bex.
I used to sit on the bench and people would be like, we need to change it up. And the manager would look and be like, as if to say, we've got nothing on the bench. And you'd be sat there like, hi. But I think managers can be.
That's hard.
I don't know what Les. Like,
I bet you don't.
It's funny because even listening to Les now, because obviously missing out on those squads, but then it would have been even worse, actually, like, because you're so close, you're even closer.
Yeah.
Especially when you feel, especially when you know you're going into a squad, and I remember the Graham Taylor squad, you go into those squads buzzing because you're scoring and you get nowhere near it.
Yeah.
And that happened, you're thinking, oh, maybe next time. But then to get so close, because like I used to think to myself, God, I didn't even get there. You know, but if I was that close and knowing the golden goal is in that tournament as well, remember? You think, come on and score the golden goal. And you don't get the chance when you've scored that many goals. It's a hard
Is it harder for a striker, you think? Because we've all have you need a bit of ego, though. Don't you?
Yeah,
to play the top level. If you're obviously scoring goals at club level. And it's about being, you're the main man, then going away with your country, knock it. It must be. Not, and even your family getting in your ear, you know, must
a defender, you don't want to come on. A defender.
That's what I'm saying. It's a different, different challenge.
Striker, you want to come score on, yeah, win a game.
Exactly. Yeah.
I used to be the one running up and down, like warming up, just really being eager.
I'd walk.
Honestly, I remember sitting next to Farrell Williams, and I went and started running for. It was Phil actually when he was in charge, and there was 2 minutes left of this game, and I was running, and she was like, "Jill, they're not going to put anyone on," and I was like, "They might." And I got on, and I was like, "I don't think I touched the ball." I was like, "It's another."
They
might give us.
You never touched the ball, you said.
No.
Normal game, was it?
Let's talk to us about Harry Kane. And he's the one centre forward that England have that's world class at this moment in time. We know that obviously there are a couple behind, like Callum Wilson, Ivan Toney,
Ollie Watkins.
Yeah. But what do you make of Harry Kane?
I mean, so like when we had him at Tottenham coming through, I remember looking at him. When I first went to Tottenham, I said he had the intelligence of a Teddy Sheringham because he wasn't quick. Mm. So he always played as that number 10, that number 8, and he knew. And because he'd played under Chris Ramsey when he was coming through the ranks at Tottenham, Chris had played him as a 7, played him as an 11, played him as an 8. So that he could understand all the different positions. So what he was, he had that intelligence to know that he weren't going to go in behind. So at times he'd come thicken up the midfield and we'd play with one up front and he would just operate in and around that place. And I said to him at the time, I said to Tim and Chris, he's got the shooting capabilities of Alan Shearer, but he's got the intelligence of Teddy Sheringham. And but I'm going to be honest, none of us saw him where he is today. We knew he'd have a career, didn't know whether it would be in the Premier League. Certainly for
weren't sure about
it. Weren't sure.
Was that off of the back of the loan moves in that? He wasn't getting like unbelievable.
Yeah, he weren't getting rave reviews. And I always remember him going to Norwich and Chrissy Hughton was there. And so he came back, unfortunately broke his leg while he was at Norwich, and he came back. I remember calling Chrissy and said, "Look, how's it going?" I said, "Been to watch him a few times, what you thought?" And he went, "Well, he's not a number 9 in the sense of a Les Ferdinand, and he's not a number 10 in the sense of a Teddy Sheringham." He said, "I think he's a 9.5. Is what he said. That's what he said. I think he's a 9.5. And then he went off to Leicester.
Leicester, yeah.
And I remember watching him going. I went to watch him play at Leicester. And if you ever watch Harry Kane jog, he's not easy on the eye when he jogs. And I remember going to Leicester and I was standing in the crowd and the crowd were giving him a bit of stick because when he lost the ball, he's jogging back. It looks like he's gasping for
air. And what age was he there, lads, when he was on loan at these clubs? Was he still like a kid? Like...
Yeah, he was 19. Right. Okay. 18, 19, 20, you know. And he came back from late. They fired him back from Leicester. And I remember calling him after the game at Leicester and I said to him, "Look, when you're going back, do me one favour. I have a sprint or walk. Don't jog." Because he's not horrible. And it's not... And because what he was, he gives you everything he's got, but his jogging just doesn't look like he's... So I said, "Just either sprint or walk, age." You know what I mean? He's like, yeah. And then they fired him back. He came back to the training ground. I always remember it. And it was like something clicked inside him. And he realised whatever he was doing weren't enough. So he became the first player into training ground. Wow. And when everybody had gone in the afternoon, he was in the gym, he was doing boxing, he was doing everything just to get his weight down, to get himself back in shape. And then when Tim took over as manager and we was there, he was chomping it to bit to get in the side. And
who was up front at the time? Was it Salgado?
Salgado was up front. And we was like, well, we can't. And the thing is, I always remember, if Harry played after 5-10 minutes, if he hadn't scored, they were singing Zelda, Zelda.
Yes.
And so we was protecting him. We stopped because we didn't want him to go through that. But he was chomping it a bit, and then in the end we unleashed him, and he just started going, and he's just not stopped.
Was his finishing in training always on point?
Yeah. We used to at times I'd take a shooting session after training, and there was Ericsson, there was Harry Kane. Addy Boyle would join in. There was a few of them. The level of finishing was just incredible. And he was always in there.
People who work with him say you do not realise the power he has until you're obviously working close up with him.
I'm telling you, like,
and a lot of the forwards from England as well. But they always say, who was you impressed? He said, Harry Kane's finishing.
He's right foot and left foot as well. Right foot and left foot.
Yeah.
Both same. And that's where I'd probably put him above Allen in terms of shooting.
Wow. You know, well, he better finish it out.
Yeah, in terms of it, his right foot's as devastating as his left foot.
Yeah.
Alan's great on his right foot. His
left he'll get it
foot,
done
he'll
with
it. He'll get it done, but H is very, very competent on his left side.
Do you like him when he does drop into them 10 positions? Because sometimes when I watch England, I'm like, sometimes he'll make goals where he's got such a long-range passing, but sometimes I'm like, let the midfielders do it because we want you in the box finishing.
Yeah, there was a time where I was watching him.
The thing is, everyone started talking about, he's dropping a bit deeper and all that, but he's always done it.
Yeah.
People just never saw it before. You know, it's just something they spoke about because, like, coming up, he used to drop into those positions and he'd make goals for people, but he'd get forward as well and score.
But it's great when you see a player like a Kane where people can write a player off at 17, 18,
yeah,
or if he's at 19 stage he's out on loan and you go, and then something happens for a player, just having that patience, particularly if a striker, maybe they get more of a benefit of the doubt sometimes. And then for the just change like that, as you said, the penny drops, you have to put the penny in.
You know who else was that? Andy Cole.
Yeah.
Andy Cole.
Yeah.
You know, they've done
when he's a young kid at Arsenal.
When he's a young kid at Arsenal.
He went to Bristol on loan.
Yeah, then just absolutely... I remember he went on loan, because when I got there, he went on loan to Fulham, then he went on loan to Bristol, then he came back, and then he got bought by Bristol. But, like, they would say, Arsenal, people were saying, he probably won't score more than 12 goals a season, where he was, and the way he played. And to be fair to him, when he was training, Andy Cole's how he is. He does his stuff, something clicked at Bristol, and then obviously you get him to Newcastle with Beardsley and all that lot. He turned into a monster. He went supernova.
Yeah.
And again, it comes down to what you're saying there, Roy, about people kind of writing people off at that age.
What kind of personality was Coley then? Was he a bit?
You know what? He's still surly, because that's the thing with Andy.
Even at United, he was a bit.
I wouldn't say surly. He's just in himself. Yeah.
I like Coley. I get on well, but sometimes people might take him the wrong way.
And that's what happened for his career. Yes. I think that's what happened in his England career. Yes. People took him the wrong way.
But probably a good lad.
You know,
great lad.
Yeah,
exactly. You know, somebody that everybody's got to be. A jester or jovial.
The great thing for Harry and some of the younger players that came through at Tottenham in the end was because we'd been where they'd been. Mm. You know, Tim Sherwood had been where they'd been, Chris Ramsey had been where they'd been. I come into the game late.
Yeah.
Was we knew that they needed a chance. They needed an opportunity. And an opportunity ain't one game. Because you get a lot of the time a player goes in. If he's not, the young player's not the best player in the first two games, he's not ready yet. Mm. You know what I mean? We persevered with him. We used to say to Harry Redknapp all the time, just afford him the same opportunity you'd afford El Dado. Because El Dado, I know you've paid 30 million, and to pay 30 million for someone, he must have done it somewhere.
Something,
But you'll give him an opportunity to develop.
And the fans love a local kid, and you get extra kind of bonus points for that.
Yeah,
and but managers under pressure.
I don't know if that's always the case, because I always think sometimes, you know, supporters talk about we love a young player coming through, but sometimes they don't give them the time to come through.
It's a different type of pressure. Yeah. But if he does hit the ground and then starts doing well, then they're fully behind him.
He's one of our own.
You're probably one of the best placed people to look at, and it's probably a bit of a pub question, but Shearer versus Kane. You play with Alan Shearer, obviously you work with Harry Kane. Who do you select if you have to make a decision?
Oh, Gary, you're wow. Oh,
It's wicked.
Both together.
But what I'm saying to you is you've got to pick one, and you've worked with Harry Kane, you've played with Alan Shearer.
You've got to give us something, Liz.
These are both great.
Shout out, Ray.
Don't bottle it, Liz.
This is the headline. This is the headline.
It's got to be Kane, isn't it?
You're out of order.
That's tough. Really tough.
Be diplomatic, bro.
No, I'm going to be diplomatic, but I would go with Shearer at the moment because I play with him and I know I work with Harry. But I'd probably go
with Alan.
Well, yeah.
I never thought he'd go to Munich. I never thought he'd leave the country. I thought he was destined to break Alan Shearer's Premier League record.
I agree.
Do you still think he's got that in his mind and that he's coming back here in a year's time to go somewhere to break that record?
As long as he comes back to Arsenal, he'll have a chance to do it.
What a signing.
He ain't going there.
Amazing.
Why are you surprised he left, Nev?
I just didn't think, to be fair, he would go. I just thought that for me, the England record.
He'd be damn hung up about
the Premier League. I don't know. Look, he had to escape.
He had to get out. As a striker, though. I just thought that he
would go to a Premier League club and he would go and try and break a record. He may have had to escape abroad
from
Daniel Levy to come back.
Yeah.
How many is he behind?
40, I think.
How many is he behind?
About 40. Something like 40.
I still think he could do it.
He could do it.
Yeah, because how old is he now?
29, is he?
Is that all he is?
He's about 30 now.
29, 30.
You know something? Harry Kane, could, in the right team...
He's 47 behind Alan Shearer, so he'd need two seasons back, wouldn't he?
Yeah. He's not going to come back somewhere where he's not going to be on the end of things, getting one-touch finishes and stuff like that. You don't know what's going to happen with Haaland, how long he's going to stay. Yeah. Imagine if Haaland left, like, next season and Harry Kane came to Man City. He could probably do that in a season.
I always think if Kane had gone there instead of Haaland, he would have smashed that record, wouldn't he? Absolutely smashed it.
Yeah. That's another. That's a different story, that one.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I want to ask you about two things. One is about the Tottenham and the... He's probably been more critical of Tottenham than anybody over the last few years in terms of the flaky tag. Did you see that?
No. Don't.
how does that sit with you? And how did it sit in the club? And where sort of do you feel... Is it unfair or do you feel it's just a case of... Obviously, they have underachieved. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I think if you look over the years, they've got that tag and... They have to wear it because that's how they've been. Whenever you think Tottenham have climbed the mountain, it comes like a ski back down it again, do you know what I mean? And they're starting from zero again. Daniel Levy's done a great job in getting the club to where it is, but it's just the investment in the players.
He just doesn't want to take management. Look, at Pochettino was the perfect example of him backing a manager at that stage. He wanted to get loaded in. He wanted to... Because they'd just come out of the Champions League final. They lost. When they finished second...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If there's any time for an owner, Les, to go, you know what I mean? I'm going to go in on this guy. Mm. You know what I mean? That would probably was the time.
But Les, I once said that he's the best operator in football because when you look at what he's done off the pitch, I mean, the stadium and the training ground are the best. They're unbelievable. Yeah. Probably apart from cities in terms of training ground, but the training ground's fantastic. Why does he not hand over the football side to... Why does he? I mean, he obviously interferes on the football side. Why won't he get that bit?
I got no idea. I think he's got this reputation of being the wheeler dealer that he is, and he's done some fantastic deals in terms of players going out of Spurs when they're ready to leave.
Top dollar.
And I think he just enjoys that part of it. He enjoys being involved in it. He enjoys making those decisions, and he's not alone. In terms of chairman and other directors wanting to be involved in certain parts of the football club that they should leave well alone, but you know,
he leave it well alone?
I think he's done some great deals, and I think he's brought a fellow called Scott Munns in now, who he said he's going to take over the day to day running of the football club. It's yet to be seen. I think he's so heavily involved in it that people still go to him and. I don't see him putting that mantle down anytime soon.
It's a shame because I'm sure the fans want an unbelievable stadium and that, but they want to win things.
But they've not won for 30 or 40 years. Why are they just putting it on Levy in the last 10 or 15 years in regard to the new stadium as if that's all he's obsessed with? Spurs have been like that for
a long time.
For a long, long time.
Yeah, but they get to a place and then it just kind of peters out. But like,
the next
what I'm saying about Pochettino.
But the next bit is the hardest bit. That's for lots of football clubs.
Yeah, but then that's up to Levy to make the decision. If what more does Pochettino have to do to say, listen, we finished second, we got to the Champions League, I just need a little bit more. Somebody has to take the leap.
I always think managers lose their job and it's never normally just about results. There's something more going on.
Of course.
There's something more going on than just the results.
So we look at it and go, well, Pochettino was doing great and blah, 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 blah. Yeah. But it's something else.
Something else happened.
Yeah, explain what you mean with that, Les, with your Tottenham experiences.
I say not just my Tottenham experiences, but being in the role that I was as a director of football at QPR.
Yeah.
Sometimes you lose a manager and people go, well, why have you done that? Because the manager's not sticking to the plan that he's come in to do. And the change room's lost. And so people don't see that part. They just see results. And they go, right, OK, well, he was doing OK. Why haven't you not backed him? Well, you ain't backed him because he's not doing what you asked him to do.
Mm. Where did you find that at QPR? We'll come on to QPR in a bit and your role there, but where did you find that at QPR?
Well, I found out a lot of times where managers came in and you sit down and you say, right, this is what we're looking for in a manager because this is what QPR needs, not what Les Ferdinand needs. This is what QPR needs. And so we set out where the things are. What the criteria is for managing.
Just give us two or three things that you'd look for.
So we was about development at QPR, right? We got relegated from the Premier League, which we knew was going to happen. We had to change everything that was going on in terms of we had some, what I'd call experienced players on quite a lot of money. Mm.
Yeah, you took the budget from 70-odd million, did you, down to 17 or 18?
That's right, 78 million. And we had to and try and stay competitive in the Championship in doing that. And at the times, when we were in, under Mick Beale, we was top of the league at one stage. We was the 14th best players in the league at the time. So we were overachieving. You know, when we was in sixth place under Mark Warburton, we were overachieving because we were 15th or 16th best players in the Championship. But what happened was, you get managers come in and they agree to what the criteria of what you're looking for.
Of course.
In terms of we needed to develop players. So the likes of Birieze comes in and goes out, starts in the academy with Chris Ramsey and Paul Hall and those guys. We get him to a level, gets into the first team. We're selling for nearly 20 million pounds. That was our model. That's what we needed to do.
Yeah.
And then managers come in and we say, well, this is what we have to do because for QBR to be sustainable, this is what we need to do.
Have to happen.
Yeah.
This is what has to happen. And then they want to change that and go, well, OK, I need this senior player and I need that. And I know you need some senior players in your squad to help those younger players, but I can't keep going senior players because that means we've got no value in the squad. And that's what I inherited when I came to the club. So when they start going away from that, that's when you need to make changes.
Beale didn't stay very long, did he?
Yeah, that was disappointing.
20-odd games.
Yeah, that was disappointing because he'd got us to the top of the league and he had the boys eating out the palm of his hand.
Mm. Yeah.
The problem with the Championship, though, is, as you know, is like if every club would believe they can get in them playoffs, but the average age, as you know, in the Championship to get promoted is 29.
Mm.
So the experience does. I understand what the plan might be, but if that's the plan and you're not winning every week, and you need a mixed bag, obviously.
Yeah.
And you're not winning every week. That's where the manager, young players are well and good. But I think if there's too many young players in your team in the Championship, they get eaten alive.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's obviously a tough balancing act, isn't it?
It is trying to get that balancing act right, but at the same time, you have to understand what your position is. And as I said, I went into QPR. When we got relegated, if the owners had said to me, look, the parachute money and everything else is going to help us get back to the Premier League, now go and get the players that we need, go, OK. No, that wasn't the case. The case was we needed to trim the squad and just try and survive in the Championship that next season.
Okay. Yeah.
Because everyone's talking about financial fair play now at all the Premier League clubs. We had that 8.5 years ago.
You got whacked, didn't you?
Got whacked, £840 million.
Wow.
So you had that on top of the excess wages that you had at the football club. So you had to trim all that down. So you had to get, so most of your parachute payments went on paying these guys to leave your football club.
Wow.
Because they were sat there. No other club was coming in to take
them. Who were
those
players at the time that you were talking? There was some big... You had big money, didn't you? That QPR team that went down, and I was working on Sky at the time, I say that's one of the most difficult sides I've ever had to watch. It was difficult in that Premier League season. It was... They weren't putting a shift in some of them, were they?
Exactly. And so you had those players that were on, 60s and 70 grands a week at QPR. When QPR went down, they were the fifth best players in the Premier League. And an average gate of 14,500. So, those players weren't going to leave your football club.
Of course.
Because no one else was going to take them on the money that they were on. So the only way you get rid of them is to pay them to go. Because what was happening there, the boys that you were bringing into the club, right, the new signings, which were of a lesser grade than the players that were already there, you're bringing in on 15s and 20s. And the boys that are on the 60s and 70s are talking about how crap this football club is. Mm. And those boys that are coming in going, this must be crap because we're running around and these boys are in the treatment room not wanting to play And they're saying how crap this is. It must be crap because we're running around and they're not.
Yes. So the culture wouldn't have been great.
So the culture wasn't great. So you're trying to change them. And then when you get rid of those big big earners, you realise the boys that you brought in for 15s and 20s shouldn't even be on 15s and 20s. Wow. So you've got to get rid of them as well.
So is there a desperation why you bring those guys in? Because you feel like we need to bring these guys in. And then all of a sudden when they've gone, you realise... Well, these ain't the guys.
That is the word, right?
And when you say desperation, it's the desperation is no. You're bringing in players that you're hoping are going to take the club to where it needs to be and stabilise it, but they get caught up in the poison of those senior players that are talking about how crap the football club is, and then you think, well, hang on, I brought you in to do a job, and they're doing a job to the best of their abilities. But then when those senior players are gone, you then realise that you know what, these are quite not where they need to be.
Was coaching a lot easier than being director of football?
Yeah,
it was stressful. Because you seem quite laid back guy, but was it stressful?
Yeah, you know,
sleepless nights.
That type.
Yeah, of course. Yes. Because anything that you're doing, you want it to be successful. You're going to give it your all, and I gave it my all. So I went to every game. I was away at home and away. And you want the team to be successful, and you're in the hands like a manager. You're in the hands of the manager and the players to go out and perform.
But it must be heartbreaking knowing there's players at your club, whatever role you had at the time, and they're coming in, they're bad-mouthing the club, but they're not putting a shift in. To me, that's...
It's the worst feeling.
It isn't.
It's the worst feeling in the world as a former footballer in my role, seeing people coming in. And the one thing I always felt in my career is like, wherever I was, I gave it my all.
Yeah. Right.
Win, lose or draw, I gave it my all. You know, of course, you have bad games, you play bad games, but you give it your all. And you see people coming in. And
did you have boundaries with people? Were you tempted to get more hands-on?
I was. You know what I mean? I had one player come in from pre-season. Right? Comes into the training ground at pre-season. And people don't know, these are the stuff that you deal with. Player comes in and we arrange pre-season and you're back in on the 9th of whatever. And he calls up the secretary and says, when are we back in?
Wow.
She said, well, you've had the letter. And I said, he's had the letter. He knows you had to sign for it, so he's had the letter. So he calls up, when are we back in? She said, well, you know when we're back in. We've told you, but I'll send you another letter. This is the day we're back in. Comes in 2 days later.
Jesus.
Just turns up two days later.
Was that from the Premier League to the Championship season?
When we're coming in the Championship. So now this is a Premier League player, no longer wants to beat your football club. So he comes in late for training. So I said to the secretary, no problem. Just have this letter waiting for him. So the letter... 2 week fine. Mm. Right. So he comes through the door, goes out of training, and he comes in my office afterwards and he says to me, don't you think 2 weeks is a bit much for only 2 days? I said, you taking a fucking piss. I said, you've come in my office, you haven't even apologised or given me a reason why you're late. Mm. You've just come in here and said to me, isn't 2 weeks' wages a bit harsh for 2 days?
Was it was publicised at the time, though, was it? Was it trapped?
No, it wasn't trapped. No, it wasn't trapped.
Who was it?
Did you try and shut that off?
No, I was thinking, who was it?
No, it wasn't late.
Tony Adams. Yeah.
Sorry, Adult Traps. Sorry, Adam. Yeah. I
thought you were going to say that letter was like, you're leaving. Nah. If I was managing, so no, I know you can't do that. But that's what you'd want to do, wouldn't you?
That's what you want to do. But then, you know what happened? Find him 2 weeks' wages. Get a call from the PFA.
Of course you do, yeah.
Yeah.
Say, Les, look, you can take this to where it needs to be, but you take it to all the PFA are going to recommend, or all they're going to recommend is that you find them a week's wages and you suspend the other.
Yeah. God,
that's what's wrong.
Do you give them a week, or do you stick with the 2 weeks?
I tried to stick with the 2 weeks, but the PFA, this is all that's going to happen.
And so then all of a sudden, does that player then now, he's got the ump with you and he's vexed because you've tried to do that? And then it's gone down to a week, so he thinks he's got one over on you.
Yeah, it's broken. It's broken.
But the place was broken.
It's broken.
The place was broken.
The fact he came back 2 weeks, 2 days late.
It's broken. Then you finish.
That's sacrilege in pre-season.
Exactly.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
And that was the attitude of some of the senior players that we had there back in the day. And you just had to put things in place and try to get rid of the ones that you could get rid of, and that's what we had to do. And it was tough. It was tough. And
It's the hardest part, isn't it? People talk about getting players into your club. It's getting players out.
Yeah, that's the tough part.
When you're on that kind of wages.
When I look back on it, you know, from 78 million down to, you know, last year I was here, we was operating just over 10 million. You know, loads of frees, loads of... And like I said, Mick Beale had us top of the league with free transfers and free loans, right? We're top of the league. And unfortunately, he decided to go. And once he left, it was... Like I said, he had the players eating out the palm of his hands. Yeah. Mm. And when he left, there was a disappointment around the place with the players and stuff like that. We were onto something here, and I felt for Neil Critchley, who came in after him, because those players were now in the doldrums and he was trying to lift them, and he just couldn't do it. And so it got a bit toxic in the end. And, you know, when I look back on it, you know, in my time, in 8.5 years here, we spent $33 million in bringing players in, but we sold 55 million's worth of talent.
Yeah.
And so that left them with a profit. But, you know, people don't see that. They just see what's going on the pitch at the moment.
My first question to you, which we've been going 50 minutes. And
first question.
What have you been up to in the last 8 months?
Flying his helicopter.
What have you been up to? Obviously, you left 8 months ago.
Yeah.
What have you been up to?
I've just been doing a bit of TV stuff here and there. You know, you sit down and reflect on what you've gone through. I'm now on the, you know, just to keep myself busy and ticking over. I'm on this LMA postgraduate leadership course.
Okay.
Just keeping the skills going and topping up and stuff like that. So,
So are you looking to go back into what you've done previously?
Yeah, I'd like to. You know, I've learnt a lot at QPR. We had to do it a bit differently. And I worked under a very good CEO in Lee Hughes, who was really helpful to me while I was on at QPR. And I feel like I've learnt a lot, and I'd like to have another go at it.
Was one of your biggest frustrations agents, or were you okay with agents?
I was okay with agents because I'm pretty straightforward. You know, I used to say to them, like, you come through the door, we sit down, and they go, right, I'm looking for X amount of money for this. This is what my player's worth. And I go, just shake hands. Let's forget it, mate, because we're nowhere near that number. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if that's what you're looking for, you ain't going to get it at this football club.
Yeah.
I go, what? I say, no. What, the old QPR that you're thinking about, this isn't anymore. So in the end, agents was... I had no problem with the agents here.
It's interesting what you said before about you feeling let down by managers not sticking to the plan. Mm. I think when we asked you about managers going into football clubs, I mean, maybe probably a couple of months or so ago on this programme, Roy said he felt that clubs weren't that genuine with managers in terms of explaining it the other way.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I mean? Yeah. So Roy felt it from a manager.
My point was that everyone has great plans at the start, but then if you start losing games, your so-called project or whatever, and it walks both ways from the club and the manager, panic sets in and the plan almost goes out the window.
The one thing I'll say about the guys that I worked for, and the reason why I ended up staying there for as long as I did, was they were very adamant that this is what we wanted and they would stick to that plan.
Yeah. Okay.
And even when things were going wrong, they'd call the manager, don't worry, we're fine. I know it's about winning games, we want to win games, but we understand where we are as a football club. And this is what our model is. We need to produce players because... You know, we're putting in X amount of money every year and we want to reduce that, but we're going to reduce that by selling players. So it's about development. We need to develop.
Even now, even where they are at the moment, they can go to League One. There's...
I mean, obviously, they don't want to go to League One. But it still has to be about development because that's the only way
to get money, are going to
progress, because the owners are quite wealthy. But as we're seeing with a lot of clubs in the Premier League now, you can't put that money into the football club because of the financial fair play situation. Mm. And that's where QPR have been for, like I said, 8.5 years.
How did you see it, Les? There was a regulator introduced in football, and I'm not going to go into the technicalities of that, but as a Championship club, and you see the parachute clubs coming down with all that might, and then they go back up again, which is happening more and more. Do you feel that the Premier League needs to be kinder to the rest of the pyramid?
Yes.
You've been at, obviously, Championship level.
And I would say that because I've been at Championship level. I think if I was in the Premier League, I was saying that, you know, you fend for yourself. You can't fend for yourself if you're not allowed to spend the money that you've got to spend.
What, like your owner's got you?
Yeah, so the owners have got the money, but they can't spend it.
You can only lose 13 million a year, is it, in the Championship? That's the sustainability rule, isn't it? Yeah. So were you losing 13 million every year?
Yeah, without a shadow of doubt, yeah.
So you couldn't spend more money?
We couldn't spend more money. So that was the problem. So that's why we was bringing in frees and loans, because we couldn't spend the money. So we had to do that to enable for the club to be sustainable. A lot of clubs, like you go to Leeds, for instance, every other week they get 30-odd thousand, yeah? Plus, during the week, their stadium is used by the boxes are used and people can have business meetings in there. QPR, because of where it is, there's no parking.
Right.
So QPR's stadium only became sustainable on a match day. Yeah. So the rest of the time...
There's no other income.
No other income coming into the football club.
Why did you leave?
just got too toxic for me. And
with what, the owners or with the players?
The great thing for me was the owners didn't want me to go. Right. You know, I had various meetings with them, had various dinners with them asking me not to go. But with the fans, it became toxic, you know, and, you know, I was thinking, why do I need to take this? Do you know what I mean? I don't...
You were getting the sort of blame.
Yeah, I was getting the blame for a lot of things, and I just felt, you know, I've put my heart and soul into this. Yeah. And listen, I think, you know, going into the role at some stage, you're going to come in for some flack. It's like...
When you say flack, Les, are you, like, getting, like, abuse on match days? Yeah. Really nasty stuff, yeah?
When I say nasty stuff, never to my face, do you know what I mean? Right, it was just like, you know, and on social media and stuff like that. And I'm not on social media, I'm not on anything apart from WhatsApp, but... my kids and yes. You know, my family read all that, so I'm thinking, yeah, what do I need that for? You know, it's got to a stage where it just became too toxic, and I thought it was time for me to step aside.
You said a quote that when you left, you said some of the criticism that came was because of my colour. I always say to people, if I was a bad director of football, it wasn't because of my colour. It was just because I was a bad director of football. If I was a good director of football, it wasn't because of my colour. It's because I was a good director of football. Yeah. Where did that come from? What experiences had you had at QPR in that period that, you know, made you feel like that at the end to say that?
Again at the end of it. Well, not at the end of it. It started from the beginning, really. Well, because
when
I first joined QPR, I came in as director of football, and Harry Redknapp was the manager. Harry Redknapp left in the end of January at the end of the transfer window. So Chris Ramsey took over as interim boss, and he was doing some coaching. The boys had said some really nice things about him on social media, which the owners saw about, you know, we're being coached and this is great and blah, blah, blah. So the owners came to me and said to me, do you think Chris Ramsey could keep us in the championship next season? I said, well, we're not going to try and get promoted. And they went, no, we can't. And sort of like explained the situation with the financial fair play and what that was going to cost them and trying to get rid of some of the players. So I said, if you're talking about just keeping you in the championship, I think Chris has got the capabilities to do that without a shadow of a doubt. I said, OK, no problem. Anyway, I suppose my naivety of going into the job at the time was I thought we could get rid of the players that we had, right, not realising the money that they was on, no one was going to pay them that type of money. So when we got to close to the start of the season, realised we couldn't get rid of the players that we had, the owners went, we need to try and get promoted now.
Oh, jeez.
Without adding anything to it, we need to try and get promoted because we ain't been able to get rid of these players. And if we don't get rid of these players and we don't get promoted, yeah, we're going to get done again.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
So that's where we were. So that's when Neil Warnock came in for a little bit with Chris Ramsey and tried to help. At the same time, we had to try and look for a manager that we felt could stabilise us, try and push for promotion, but at the same time, make sure we didn't get relegated as well. So at the time, we employed Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank. And what we did, we had a real democratic type of voting system at QPR. So myself and Lee Hughes would go and interview 20, 30 different managers. We worked it down to the five best that we thought was in the style that QPR wanted to play with. And then the owners would come in on the interviewing process and they would want to have a chat and so on. So we went through that. And then we put it to a vote. And at the time of voting, Jimmy came out on top. And so I employed Jimmy after Chris Ramsey. And then the press started saying, are you doing it the other way? Mm. Are you now being racist and wearing black manager? But at the time, what they didn't realise that Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, when we employed him, had the best win ratio of any manager in the whole of England. Mm. Yeah. Right, but they didn't look at that. They just looked at the fact that I'd employed another black manager and it started from there. And then some of the supporters started going, oh, he's bringing the black mafia in. Mm. And it sort of like started from there. And then towards the end, it was, you know, Chris Ramsey was in place. Paul Hall had already been in place in the academy before I got to the club. And so I used to get, you know, journalists come and say, you've got the most diverse football club in the country. What are you doing? I said, well, I'm not doing anything. Mm. I said, I've employed more Caucasian people than I have black people. Why do you want to have a conversation about the black people that work at QPR?
Yeah.
Or the black coaches that work at QPR? I've employed more Caucasian people. Why are you not talking about that? And so it started from there, and then some of the fans picked up on it. It's really weird because, you know, some of the former players that was at QPR started, you know, adding their penny worth of...
Wow.
of that stuff into it, and it became
who, like when
what were they, what kind of
what sort
they,
of
yeah they were saying like, oh, you know, you're just employing black players now and stuff like that, and
what
so
players
that
so
you're
left.
Just yeah players that had left no sure like former players that had been at the club before,
right,
you know, you're just employing the best people for the job though.
And you know what we did, Jill, in the end we had a policy of not even looking at people's names. We just looked at the CVs first and foremost and said, okay, this is the job spec. Does this CV match the job spec that we're looking for?
So you wouldn't have a name or a picture of the person, and you'd just look at the CV to try and... because of the accusations...
No, we felt that was the best way. Just eliminate any prejudice in any way. Mm-hmm. Just look at the CV and say, right, this is the job spec that we've put out there. Which CVs match that job spec?
Yeah.
And then you look at the names. And then you go, okay, right, let's get this person and let's get that person. But we'd already made a decision based on that CV
Was that something you had to bring in yourself so as people didn't accuse you of this? Or is that something that was just there anyway? You didn't have the names on the CV?
In the end, we felt, based on some of the courses that I'd been on, we just felt that was the best avenue to go down rather than it was anything to do with what colour.
But it's always a reminder as well about trying to get a manager that fits your club, isn't it?
Like, yes.
It's hard. Obviously, never you've experienced at Salford. Trying to get that manager, you can interview him, but I still don't think you know the dynamics of a manager or his personality, I think, until he's in there.
No, you're
he's
right.
in until he walks in that door.
Yeah.
Again, interviews, I'm always intrigued what makes a good or a bad interview, whatever about a person's CV. You're on about Jimmy, for example, good win ratio, but sometimes a manager can come in, timing,
yep.
And it just... There's no logic to it, it's just the timing, or it's got to be the right fit for the club.
And like I said, you know, Michael Beale came from nowhere.
Right.
Out of nowhere, no one was talking. I mean, people were talking about him as being a coach, but no one, he'd never been a number one. But we looked at him, we looked at the criteria, and we thought, you know, well, that quite fits what we're looking for.
Yeah.
You know, he came through the door, and like I said, he was fantastic. And even now, people say to me, I know he's had a couple of dodgy spells at Rangers and then Sunderland, but you know, if someone was to ask me today, I always said that he would be a top manager somewhere.
Mm.
You know, he's failed in his last two quests, but I think he jumped too early from QPR.
But when he goes in there and you do a deal with him at QPR, how can a manager leave so quickly then? Like, I'm not saying you can give him an unbelievable contract or huge compensation, because you probably mightn't be able to get him in the door, but when a manager comes in who's probably not got that many options, that they can leave so quickly without decent compensation or whatever it might be, and a manager can just walk out the door.
You know, one of the things I said was, you know, Michael came through the door, and I think there was a lot of clubs that had looked at Michael, but didn't take the chance because he hadn't been a number one.
Right.
He came through the door at QPR, and then all of a sudden everyone's gone, oh, right, this is what we thought he could be.
The real
right.
deal.
And then sort of like, you know, the Wolves were the first club to come.
That's right,
You know, and even then, you know, and he'll tell you this if you ever speak to him. Wolves came in the day we were playing at home, I think it was playing Hull at home. They came in. And spoke to the CEO. CEO calls me and he says, can you believe they've called on the match day?
Jesus.
Right? And I said, all right, no problem. So after the game, I go down and I say to Michael, we need to say something here because this is going to be in the press tomorrow. So you either need to say something to players. And he goes, listen, I didn't know it was happening today. So Mike, if you want me and you to carry on being friends, don't lie to me.
Right.
So, because I've not lied to you the whole time you've been at this football club. He said, well, look, I knew they was coming in, but I didn't know it was today. No problem. So I said, what do you want to do? And I said, I'm the director of football at QPR, and I don't want you to leave.
Right.
I don't want you to leave this football club. Where we are at this moment and where we're going, no chance I want you to leave this football club. So he goes, OK. But I had my QPR blazer on and threw it. So I took it off and threw it to the side. I said, now I'm Les Ferdinand talking to you. You've got to do whatever the best thing is for you and your family.
Oh.
Right, and he said to me, now that you've done that, he said, now that you've done that, you've taken the badge out play and you talk to me like a human being. He said, I can't leave this football club.
Oh.
He said, obviously he was being offered Premier League wages. He said, can we change the structure at all? So I went to the owner and said, look, this is the case, and they were willing to change the structure for him. And then Rangers came in. And to be honest with you, when he came to the football club, and we've all done it. We've been at football clubs that we've enjoyed. When people talk to me about Newcastle, it was the best period of my life in football.
Mm.
And so I have fond memories of Newcastle. Michael Beale had fond memories of Rangers. Whenever he spoke about any of the clubs he's been at, Rangers was the one that he spoke about with the most fondness. Yes. I always said to the owners, if we're going to lose Michael Beale, I don't think it'd be now, but in a year or two's time, I think it might be to Rangers.
Yeah.
I think that's the only club that will think, unbeknown, they were going to come in as soon as they came in, and they did. And I think that, you know, the appeal of what would happen and him thinking this may never come around again. Yeah.
But how can he just leave then? How can a manager? I don't mean, it's like a player. So they obviously just agree compensation with the club.
Yeah.
Simple as that. Oh, okay.
And you know what it's like. Someone comes to you and says, I want to, you know, I'm interested in this. Mm. You know they're no longer interested at QBR.
Yeah.
And they're head and their heart somewhere else.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, Sunderland was even less time, wasn't it? Because I thought he was going to come and make a massive impact, especially on the back of that. And it was only... How many games was he in charge? Like,
why has he struggled less? I mean, what's your feeling of why he struggled?
Michael's a very confident person in the way he comes across and in the media and on social media and everything. He's very, very confident in what he did. And when he came to QBR, that confidence the boys got on board with. And I think taking it somewhere else.
Yeah.
This was his first foray into it. And so I think the boys got on top
of it. So he's having himself a little bit.
Yeah, he's very confident in what he does, and you know, in the way he spoke to the players and the manner in which he spoke to the players.
Yeah.
They, you know, they bought into it. It was his first gig, and you know, he'd done his homework, and he was excellent. Absolutely excellent. And I've got to be honest, it's the first manager that's come through the door that's done exactly what we wanted him to do.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, getting the best out of the players. And we had players that we thought, we're going to sell this one, we're going to sell that one, that one's going to go, and blah, blah, blah. And like I said, it just...
How many months was he there? How many months is that QPR?
So he came in the summer and he was gone by November. That was just before the World Cup.
I was just thinking before about when Les was discarding those CVs in the bin that he wasn't even looking at. It could have been mine and yours, wouldn't it?
You're not anti-Irish, are you?
You wouldn't have even known it was us.
Shredder.
I applied once. We never. Didn't even know he was kicked
just
him
once.
we never discarded the CVs. We looked at them.
Sporting directors' jobs don't come up that often, do they? No. Obviously, there's only, you know, very rare amount of them in this country. Have you been for interviews since, in terms of sort of a role? Where would you like to go back in?
Not in this country, I haven't.
Okay.
I've been called a couple of times by the MLS and spoken to a couple of people over there.
David Beckham.
Little gig, that one.
Miami and Messi.
What does a successful sporting director do? Because I mean, I was only a manager for 4 months. I had a sporting director there for a couple of months, and I was imagining his role was quite difficult in terms of interfering but not looking like they're interfering, managing but not looking like they're managing, giving advice where they're not, but not giving advice. Because you know, I think you should play this way, or I think you should play him, or I think you should. Where's the line for a sporting director?
Is there a line?
No, I'm just saying. Where's that balance?
So me personally, I can't bring you in as a manager and then tell you how to play.
No,
I might as well do your job.
Yeah,
I might as well apply for your job. And
but if, he's get, to do but that if a manager's getting the team wrong and you can see it and the system's wrong, how do you deliver that message?
So I think on occasions, every game, I would sit and I'd speak with the manager. The manager would tell me the team that on a Friday. Blah, blah, blah. And we would talk about it. I'd never say to him, I think you should play this one, or I think you should play that one. All we'd do is, he says to me, Les, we need a right back. And I go, OK. He says, I want Gary Neville. And I go, we can't afford Gary Neville. Mm. But what we could do, with all the data...
Well, OK. Are you teeing him up, Les?
Come on, mate. Nice one, Roy. Don't bite.
But I'm saying, right, we can't afford Gary Neville, but with my head of recruitment and all the sports science and all the data, we come up with three or four similar types to a Gary Neville. And I say to him, this is what we can afford. Take your pick. There's no player that came into QPR, apart from the younger players that weren't going to affect the first team straight away, that the manager didn't say yes to.
Mm.
Yeah.
There were a couple that he wanted and we said no to,
mm.
but there was never a player that came through the door that was thrust upon the manager and said, you've got to play him.
Right. That happens Premier League sometimes, though, doesn't it, or not? Or do you think
I think that's how... It's different at each club, but I think that's one of the popular ways of doing it. Yeah. But
I think the manager's always got to have a say in
it. Yeah,
of course. I think again, the boundaries you have, but I always think whoever's director of football, or even if you're a manager, you've got staff around you, obviously your aim is to help the manager.
Exactly. 100%.
Help the manager, 100%.
But what is that, Roy? What does that mean?
So you sit down...
Well, sometimes
again, that's where the boundaries are. That's where a bit of common sense comes in.
Staying away from them?
For example, you're watching a team playing the weekends. It must be hard when you're an ex-player as well. Yeah, and I see you at Salford matches. And sometimes people think they know what's best. But if you've interviewed managers, you have to give the manager that chance. It doesn't mean say you can't have a sit-down chat going, hey, he's struggling. And you go, you do it. But you have to have... I had a little bit with it when I was up Sunderland for a while. Niall was the chairman. Yeah. I'll give Niall plenty of credit. But when he was the chairman, and Niall's an ex-player, but he never once would he get involved, ever. And I know he must have been tempted sometimes, but he was always there to help as well. So if I wanted a player, he'd give a little bit of feedback. Yeah, but it's too much wage. And I always felt, I felt he was there to help me. Yeah. At no point did I think he's in hindrance, or I know he's talking behind my back, or he's taking, again, the usual one, I wouldn't have played him. Mm. And everyone wants to be manager of a football club.
Yeah.
But I think it's just having them boundaries with people and being grown up as well. And sitting down with somebody go, listen, you've played 2.5 centre-halves, they're struggling. You go, yeah, a bit of feedback. Yeah. But why are you the manager of the club? You have your own staff to deal with that. That's what you're in the job for. Yeah.
I don't know if you found this, Les, but I found when I was sort of at Salford, I wasn't sporting director, but I would have liaison with managers. Do you find managers, I mean, the toughness of the role, do you find that they get insecure quite quickly?
Yeah, for sure.
They're so I used to find that it used to worry me, think, the insecurity of a manager, that they're questioning themselves, they're sort of asking you for sort of, if you like, validation of their team talk, and they're actually, to be fair, they're not as sure as they actually sometimes propel. Did you find that?
Yeah, because I think sometimes, you know what it's like sitting in the changing rooms, you've got 11 players or you've got 16, 17 players sitting there, you're not going to strike a chord with every single one of them.
Yeah.
And you know what it's like, you can sometimes be talking and someone's not looking at you while you're talking and thinking, he ain't taking in what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's when they're looking for the validation. They're looking, do you think that was okay?
Yeah.
And you go, yeah. And like I said, I never used to go into change rooms for the team. Yeah. Every now and again after a game, I'd go and listen to what he's got to say. Yeah. But never, ever, ever butt into anything that he had to say. No. We would go into his office after and we'd talk. And you'd talk about football at the end of the game. He played well or he didn't play well. Mm. That's what we used to do.
Yeah.
But I would never say to him, do you know what, you can't play him next week.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was only one occasion I remember having a bit of a row with a manager. We'd taken a kid on loan and we were paying quite a lot of money. And he'd had a couple of horror games.
Mm.
And I said to the manager, the only thing I'll say to you is like, all my scouts and all that said about this player, he wasn't right. I came to you and said he weren't right for us. But in the end, you persuade us to take him. All I'd like is one of our own players, to play as badly as that. Because if he did, you'd be saying to me, I don't want him nowhere near my first team.
Mm.
But because we're paying a bit of money, and this is what I'm talking about, development and giving people an opportunity. You'll take someone from a Tottenham or an Arsenal or someone, take them on loan and allow them to play badly in 10 games, but your very own, you give one game to him. And if he plays like that, you go, right, I'm out the door. That was the only time I had an argument with manager.
There's also issues with loan players. I know it's separate where people, clubs are under pressure. When they put him on loan to a QPR or a championship, he has to play.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if you don't, there's a financial point.
Yeah.
You know,
there's loads of different things.
People don't see that, though, do they? Sometimes.
Yeah. Jesus, I understand it.
Wow.
I just want to take you back to 95, 96.
Oh, thank you.
Final part.
You knew you weren't getting away without this.
It's Christmas.
Yes.
You're 12 points clear of Manchester United.
Jesus.
What happened?
I spoke about this the other day and someone said to me, did you lot bottle it? And I said, well, that's what a load of people would say. We bottled it.
Yeah.
And then they said, so do you think Arsenal bottled it last year? And I said, no. I said, because I've been in that position, I understand what happens. Up until Christmas, we were playing free-flowing football. No one was thinking about everything. We just going out and we were playing, we were scoring goals, we were winning games. Mm. We got to Christmas. I always remember going back to London and coming back straight to the training ground. We had a training session, and there's a fella with a shirt on walking in front of me, because at Newcastle, we used to train at a place called Maiden Castle, which was a university. I was telling someone the story the other day. The first day we got pre-season, I go into the showers after the game. I'm showering away, and I go, fuck me, that was hard today. There's no response from the fellas that's two showers away. I went, don't you think that was hard today?
I look across, it's just a geezer from the university. I don't know what I'm talking about. Yeah. Where's he come from? Like, I mean, but, so, yeah, I'll get back to the training, girl. Sorry, back to the story. And this geezer's got Champions 96 on his shirt.
Oh, no.
You know what I mean? You know those little...
In January.
This is December.
December.
This is December.
We'll get excited in the North East.
Exactly, and he's got Champions 96, and I thought... You don't need to see
that. You can't.
I didn't really want to see that. And then I think what happened, we started to, after Christmas, we started to think about it. And then we knew that you guys were coming, and it was like...
What were the team meetings like with Keegan? What was he like? Was he... Because obviously everybody remembers the love and stuff, but what was he like in when he's talking? Because you could feel... Could you feel the anxiety? Could you feel it?
No, at the time, no. No, I have to be honest. He was pretty calm. He was pretty cool. I mean, I know everyone looks.
But he's obviously holding it in
the Leeds game and stuff. And no, he was pretty calm. You know, he had Terry McDermott around. These guys have won things in their career. Yeah. There wasn't a lot in that Newcastle side that had won things in the past. And so it was a little bit of we started to get caught and we started to think about everything we were doing. And you know what it's like. And no matter what sport you play. You start to think about it, everything happens a second slower, and then all of a sudden the shot that you would take is getting blocked. The tackle that you'd make, and you're thinking about it, the person goes round you, and before you know it, we went to Arsenal, lost to Arsenal, went to Liverpool, lost at Liverpool in that 4-3 game. I feel if we'd have won the Liverpool game that 4-3, that would have given us a boost to go carry.
Momentum's
on.
Huge.
Yeah,
exactly. I keep using that word, that momentum towards the end of the season. Yeah. Even a couple of defeats there, I always look back at certain teams, you've got even a draw.
Yeah.
But you're thinking, yeah, someone's hunting the stone, you have to win. No, it's a few draws along the way. The time, obviously, we went up and won there.
Yeah, yeah.
Even a draw there.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just a gap and momentum, and we ended up getting the second half.
What did you make of it when Kevin did the famous sort of, I love it if we beat them? What, as players?
I mean, I think you know what a training ground is like. We went in the next day and everyone was going, I'd love it. Everything you did was, I'd love it. And no one saw it as... Kevin was one of those, you know, I always say players, fans want players to wear their heart on their sleeves.
He was that guy.
He's emotional, isn't he?
Yeah, and Kevin wore his heart on his sleeve. And as a manager, that's seen as a weakness.
Absolutely not. No, I don't think so.
But I think most people saw it as Alex Ferguson winning the mind games over Kevin Keegan. He just wore his heart on his sleeve. And I don't think there was any player at the time that thought, he's lost it.
Soft, but he would have loved it. He's just saying what he would have loved it. But how were you feeling on the flip side?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? When you're chasing that, were you confident that you could do it? Did you ever talk about
when
it?
When you saw that interview, did you think, we've got
him? Experience, that belief. No, not from the interview, far from it, just from the couple of results. And you see them obviously slipping up in certain games and the win. But no, I'd never be critical of Kevin Keegan for that. I admire him, not just for that bit, because he is an emotional guy. He's not a robot. So this idea that they lost it because of some...
Yeah.
They probably slipped up just before that.
Yeah.
The kind of damage was done. And I go back to it, momentum, and we'd always feel we could hunt the team down.
When I saw it, the first thing you instantly think is he's in his head now. Ferguson's got him now. Mm. You know what I mean?
So and that's what I'm saying. Most people thought that way.
Yeah. You just think that. You just think, okay. Because obviously he's trying to... Remember, as time went by, he's trying to do it with Wenger. It just didn't hit the same. But obviously he worked... on the fact that Kevin Keegan's emotional. It's what he went with. Mm. And just, so he tried to accuse him of something that would go integrity.
Yeah, he was hurt by that.
It was like, you know what? Yeah. It was mean. Yeah. It was a mean thing to do.
What he said, because we played against Leeds and he thought they were going to roll over because of their rival with
United.
United. And then we'd agreed to play in... Stuart Pearce's testimonial at the end of the season.
We had
Forrest to play. And he went, well, they're going to roll over, aren't they? It was clever. You know. Yeah.
Well, the perfect place to end. That was absolutely fascinating.
That was so insightful, bro.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me on. I can't even imagine what it's like being in
the amazing. Well, well done. Great to see you.
Cheers, nice one.
Brilliant.
Bye, guys.
You still want to know the player who was 2 days late, but do that.
It was two days late. Come on, Les.
No, we can't. We're still on the record.
We're on the record.
Les, watch out.
Was it publicised at the time?
No, it wasn't.
OK. Les, do you remember scoring a goal at the back post against me where you put me in the back of the net?
Yes.
Why didn't you mention that on there?
I just remember QPR... a chip to the back post.
That was your first game, wasn't it?
One of my first games, and literally he subbed me about 2 minutes later and put, I think he put you right back. I just remembered you literally battered me into the back post.
Yeah, would that be something? Would that
be? You've done that loads of times.
Oh, no!
Juventus, you just spoke about a couple of good Juventus. Remember you ended up in the goal in the back of the goal?
How did that? No, what I'm saying is he literally jumped above me and just went boom,
bam. Yeah, because
that's what the manager would have said to me before the game. You get round the back of him. Bully him. Please tell me.
Do you know that game I was playing against Trevor Sinclair?
Wow.
That game did all right, but then honestly, Les came to the back post and.
Oh. Is that something that would have bothered you as well, Gal? Because you'd like got.
Of course, he's
going to
peel off on the back of you. I'd be doing that every day of the week.
Get back off the level.
Because Ned, honestly, what Gary used to do, you used to love that one. Les like
no, seriously, I used to be good at the back post, jumping into people, but
yes.
I just got square on, which is just absolute.
No, but the thing is,
Les just got up.
You know, the sad thing is, he can't even remember. He's like, of course, I don't remember. Have you got that video?
Kevin Gallen crossed it.
Kevin Gallen.
Yes. Les was one, yeah, but Les had the hang time. He used to have a trampet in his back pocket. He just put it down and just like, Les was up here.
Nev was waiting for him.
They weren't very good in the end.
I've never seen anyone jump that high.
Les was unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
But I think it's wanting it.
What's that?
It's like wanting it, bravery, isn't it?
Ooh. No, but if you've got Gary, you know what's good about it though, Jill, is that if you've got Gary on the back pocket, you can just peel off.
You come against me on the back post.
I wasn't the number nine to come in and bat you, because if I was, Gal, you probably wouldn't. We wouldn't probably on the show together. I would have absolutely smashed him. I've smashed him, Les.
Les.
Amazing. I'm doing a picture. Where's the guy? Where's the picture guy? Why are we all of a sudden using a smaller camera? What's happening?
You've got a very important engagement.
No, right, we have a business meeting. Another podcast.
Another offer for us, right?
You can't take a picture on voice, Ford.
Brilliant.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.